It's the Kim Monson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our body.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the Kim Monson Show. I am Kim Monson. Thank you so much for joining us. Each of you, you're treasured, you're valued, you have purpose. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And be brave, be courageous each and every day. Thank you to this great team that I get to work with, producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Greatly appreciate each and every one of you. Happy Thursday to you, producer Steve.
Yes, happy Thursday. One day away from that magical day. And, you know, when you thank this group who we all do have a part in this pie, it's become so evident just in the last 10 days about the pieces that we all bring to the greater pie.
For sure. And we do a lot. There's a lot of content that comes out of this little team. And the reason that we do this is to help you get your brain around these issues so that you can engage in the battle of ideas with your friends, your family, and your colleagues and your neighbors. We are in an epic battle of ideas. We did not even realize just how big this battle is, but every day we're seeing more and more this assault on the American idea, this assault on the American middle class, the assault on the American people. And with what we're seeing with the Harris-Biden-Obama-Rice administration and leaving Americans in Afghanistan, not getting them out before they drew down our presence there, it's just evident that they have no regard for American citizens. And this has been a long time in coming. The mask is truly off now, and we have a tremendous amount of work to do to reclaim our constitutional republic, producer Steve.
Well, I guess you sent me a text. Patty sent a text yesterday. There were two bullet items on it, and you know, her comment was, they really do hate us. One of them had to do with EVs, and I can't remember what the other point was, but the point was very obvious in terms of the hardship that they're bringing down on the working middle class.
Well, and I think that the dot that to connect there was a headline about the fact that there are a number of rare earth minerals in Afghanistan. And then Biden does the executive order that we're going to all be driving electric vehicles by 2035. And the batteries for electric vehicles require rare earth minerals, of which we're not mining any in America at this time. So this makes us more and more dependent on China for our energy sources, for our freedom of mobility. And it is just apparent that they have no regard for the everyday hardworking American. And then when we see the flood at the border, and then that airplane, we talked a little bit about it yesterday with Karen and Lauren, that airplane filled with people that was coming out of Afghanistan. And when you looked at it, it was primarily, I think they said there was maybe about 140 Americans on there. And you look at it, it's primarily young men. And they're leaving behind women and children with the Taliban there. And you have to wonder about a policy. They're packed in there without masks. I'm certainly sure that they didn't require vaccination papers like de Blasio is requiring if you want to go to a restaurant in New York. But for everyday hardworking Americans, now you have to show your papers, please, in New York if you want to do anything. But yet they say it's racist if, in fact, you want to have voter ID. But yet you have to have ID to go into anything in New York. And New York, we know, it is really a melting pot of so many different cultures. And we also realize that among the black population in America, the vaccination rate is low. And so are they not being racist now towards the black population, saying that they have to have vaccination papers to go do anything in New York? One has to connect that dot, Producer Steve.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, just like we heard yesterday in Patty's story, how many people can really connect the dots between much of anything these days?
Well, I think more and more people are waking up, Steve, and I'm very encouraged about that. And I very quickly, first of all, want to welcome you to go to my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent op-eds and podcasts. And we'll have an op-ed by Rick Turnquest this week. And then we did do a podcast with Pastor Christine Ubazera Coleman. And she survived the Rwandan genocide. And we're talking both about Afghanistan and forced vaccinations. So be sure and do that. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And I so appreciate all of you who contribute. We are an independent voice, an alternative to all the craziness out there, as we search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. And it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, fear, coercion, or the latest silent thief, which is government-induced inflation. If something is a good idea, then you shouldn't need force to implement it. Our quote for today is from the Marquis de Lafayette. He was known in the United States as Lafayette. He was a French aristocrat and military officer who fought in the American Revolutionary War. And he was very good friends with George Washington. Since we're going to be talking with Ben Martin about the Revolutionary War in segments 2, 3, and 4, I thought we'd quote Lafayette. He said, "True republicanism is the sovereignty of the people. There are natural and imprescribable rights which the entire nation has no right to violate." And speaking of violate, I was up in Loveland last night. There was a panel, 5 women who lived under socialism, and it was riveting. They said what we are seeing now in America is living under socialism as well. And one of the things is these mask mandates, and we are seeing parents say, no, we do not want our kids masked up. And on the line with me is a parent up in the Thompson School District. She was at a meeting last night where parents showed up. Brittany Fryer, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Brittany, something I think rather remarkable happened at the school board meeting last night in Thompson Valley. Tell us what was going on.
There was probably 200 to 300 parents that showed up protesting the mask mandates that have been forced and are being forced on our kids. We are trying to encourage the Board of Education to support and stick to our right for choice. We fully support parents who want to put a mask on their kids. We support parents who don't want to put a mask on our kids. The Board of Education is taking our health of our kids into their own hands and, engaging in some pretty corrupt behavior behind the scenes. So we showed up last night, and it's very structured, very, very organized what's happening. The first, I think, 12 speakers were pro-mask, and there was about 100 comments after that are against it. So, I mean, it's very, very clear that things are structured and laid out and coordinated to work against us in this fight for choice.
Well, and speaking, you mentioned corrupt. And
yes,
as I was leaving the meeting last night, someone handed me a copy of an email from a Thompson School District Board of Education member. I think her name's Lori Huzaida Ward, I think it is. And this was to one of the county commissioners. And why don't I just read this very quickly so that we have it out there? And she said, this is to Jody. Let's see. I got to find who is the
Jody
county commissioner.
Holly.
I'm sorry. One more time.
Jody Shattuck McNally.
Okay, and she is a county commissioner, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so this is from a school board member to a county commissioner. And it says, "Hi, Jody. I'm sure you're aware of the demands by some Thompson School District parents and teachers for a mask requirement for children in schools. We at the school district level have been relying on guidance from Larimer County Public Health Director Tom Gonzalez, which is that the community members are strongly recommended to wear masks in public school settings. We too strongly recommend mask wearing. We are not the health experts, however, and neither the county nor the state health policy professionals are willing to lead on this and enact a mask mandate. Boulder County has just shown decisive leadership by mandating mask wearing in schools. Trad County Health, which is Adams, Arapahoe, and Douglas counties, at this very moment is considering enacting a mask mandate to schools. Larimer County and Well County appear to be unwilling even to consider a mask mandate. Commissioners Kafalas and Stevens are aware of the request for the county to act on this. The county has the authority to enact health orders, which the school district is tasked with following. I am at a loss to understand the reluctance, unless it's purely political. With your family's experience in the medical profession, I know you understand and care deeply about the health of our community. I encourage you and the other commissioners to take action." And again, this is from school board member Lori Zida Ward to the county commissioner on that. And I don't know how you guys got a hold, or not you guys, but somebody got a hold of this. And it shows, it yeah. clearly shows collusion on that, Brittany.
Absolutely. It's disgusting that they are trying to go behind the scenes, and this is the problem that we have. All of these backdoor deals, trying to go back behind the health department. It makes you wonder, you know, where these mandates are coming from, because clearly this email, there's no facts, there's no statistics. They clearly state that they're not health professionals, and neither are the county commissioners. So it definitely shows collusion. I mean, this is... it's disgusting behavior from our elected officials trying to force mask mandates. I mean, clearly the data is not there, or the state health department and the county health department would be doing this, not far left activists trying to backdoor pressure each other into forcing mask mandates on our children.
It's really beyond belief. So once again, when they say follow the science, she doesn't want to follow the science, and she's encouraging the county commissioner not to follow the science either, and
Absolutely.
To actually strong arm. Go ahead.
She was laughing last night at herself and kind of rolling her eyes. I mean, she thinks that this is funny and that there's no problem with this whatsoever. So
these are our children.
Yes, I pulled my kindergartner out. I refused to put a mask on my kindergartner. I gave my older children the choice. They're in high school. You know, it's hard. Parents are pressured. We don't know what to do. We don't know, you know, what's best for our kids. But I know that putting a mask on elementary school kids is not what's best for them. So there's a lot of things that can be done. A lot of different options,
yeah.
But...
yeah, and you gave public comment last night.
I did, yes.
And you said there was standing room only. I hear it was overflow. And I've cool. seen this act before. I served on city council, and so I've seen the politics on how this whole thing works. Those that have an agenda, they recruit their people in to make public comment.
Yes.
They get that on record, and they don't expect that anybody's going to show up on the other side. You guys showed up. And I think one of the things we want to do is make sure that parents in these other school districts understand, first of all, you're not alone. People are very concerned about this. And the meeting that I was at last night, Brittany, five women talked about growing up under socialism. And one of the things they said is, we have to, each and every one of us, we have to start to say no. So what happened last night? Do you know the final outcome of what happened last night at the Thompson School District meeting?
yes, they decided to enact a temporary mask mandate. So with no end date in mind, they are masking the kids. So as of Monday morning, all children in elementary school will be forced to put a mask on their faces and attend school. So if you guys go online and watch the board meeting, they have a YouTube channel. It was very confusing and it was quite sickening to watch the back and forth. I mean, they're trying to brainstorm on record. What do we do with the swimmers? How do we mask the swimmers? They can't wear masks. What about football? They're outside, but they work out in the weight room. How do we put a mask on them? I mean, it was just, it was laughable. Trying to mask in classroom and then saying, well, what about the cafeteria and they have to eat? I mean, not to sound harsh, but these are a bunch of older people who, I mean, they're not putting a mask on their elementary school kids and sending them to school. So I don't understand how we are giving them the right to tell us that our kids are not being affected by it.
Well, it is time. Go ahead, Brittany. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say that parents need to start volunteering more and coordinate. We are past the days where we can take our kids to school and drop them off and trust that everything is going great for them, and we pick them up at the end of the day. We're busy, and you know, we're working, and we're working hard, and we've got to get in, volunteer at least long enough to where we can coordinate with other parents and create maybe volunteer groups in our children's classrooms, so we can rotate in and have multiple people volunteering, so we have eyes in the schools at all times. Talk to your principals. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Go ahead. Okay, Brittany, we're out of time. But first of all, the other thing is just to say no. Pulling your child out of school, and I know that that's highly inconvenient, but maybe parents can come together and figure out a way to teach kids at school. I tell you, those little one-room schoolhouses, what they taught kids during the move west was pretty amazing. And again, take a look at the Saline County, Kansas, 1895 eighth grade graduation exam. And you can see in those little one-room schoolhouses how they taught kids. Brittany, what's the last thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners this morning?
Turn your ballots in. These elections are coming up in November for the Board of Education. We have a chance to win 4 seats in Poudre School District, 4 seats in Thompson School District, 3 seats in Estes Park. That's 11 school board director vacancies. So turn your ballots in. We have to start turning our ballots in. We will win every election if we just turn our ballots in. It's that easy.
Okay, and the ballot is so important. Brittany Hughes, thank you so much. Brittany Fryer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay, we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, this show is brought to you by a number of great sponsors, this particular one by the Harris family. Because we're going to have Ben Martin on talking about our Revolutionary War. Hooters Restaurants is another great sponsor of mine, and they're getting into all their football specials. So they have lunch specials, happy hour specials, Wednesdays, Wingsday, all kinds of specials. You go to my website, click on my sponsors tab. I recommend each and every one of them. Click on the Hooters tab, and that'll have all their specials there. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Ben Martin.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com, and I appreciate all of you who support us. On the line with me is Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, graduated from West Point, and he's a former Army Ranger. He loves our history, and I learned so much from him, and so I thank the Harris family for the sponsorship of this particular show. Ben Martin, welcome.
Hey, good morning, Kim. How are you doing?
I am doing well, and I take great heart in our last guest, Brittany Fryer, who gave us an update on what happened at the Thompson School District last night, and I have to say gutless on the school district that they would enact a temporary mask mandate. We know what temporary can be in government. And
sure.
I wonder if, in a way, that was a Tea Party moment, throwing tea over the side of the ship last night up there in Thompson Valley. Parents are to a point, have enough. And really, really mask little kids where they have to, first of all, wear that all day long and breathe back in things that the good Lord said we were supposed to expel out of our bodies as we would breathe, and put masks on little kids to not be able to expel all that. I'm getting pretty frustrated about it, Ben Martin.
I bet you are. I mean, I think everybody's pretty frustrated. It's kind of a crazy time right now.
Oh, my gosh, it is. But I think the great thing about the show that we do with you is it was crazy times back then, too, during the Revolutionary War. And I know that I've cramped our time up a little bit, so let's get right into it, Ben Martin.
Okay, Kim. Well, today we're going to continue our examination of another important aspect of the Revolutionary War, our war for American independence. And this presentation today and our presentation next month are closely connected because the major campaigns in both of these next two programs occurred in the same year, 1777. And both are influenced by some of the same factors and also by each other. So next month's presentation will be about the campaign in the Hudson River Valley, most often referred to by the name of its most important culminating battle, the Battle of Saratoga. And this month, today, we will discuss the Philadelphia campaign, the campaign for our capital city at that time. The year 1777 was the most active year of the American Revolutionary War. There were more soldiers in the field and more major battles fought than in any other year of the war. It was also a year that changed the British perspective of fighting those, quote, untrained American rebels. It was a year in which the British changed their military leaders in America. It was a year in which the Americans gained a powerful ally, France and its powerful navy. It is a year in which American military prowess grew and matured. In summary, it was a very important year for America's future. And before we get into our presentation, I just want to say there were a couple notable events in 1777 that we're not going to talk about. One was on 14 June when the Continental Congress approved the American flag design. And then we call it now Flag Day, but I call it the birthday of the American Army, which was 2 years earlier than the flag. And then 23 July, when Lafayette arrives in Philadelphia. So those two things happened, but they happened in that same year. So 1777 was a big year for us. So we start with conflicts and objectives and obstacles to human virtue. And we think, well, how does that have to do with the war? So let me explain it to you. So how many of us can remember, all the people that are listening out there, and you and I, Kim, of our presentations back in February and March of this year when we discussed the Boston campaign? In mm-hmm. that time, we talked about the aftermath of the battles of Lexington and Concord and the shot heard around the world. We mentioned that in order to throttle the militancy of the New England colonists, the British government sent to Boston a few thousand more troops and three young, aspiring, all-star major generals, Howe, Burgoyne, and Clinton. And we said then that we would hear more about these generals as the war proceeded. So this is fulfilling that promise, and it's a really important part. So I know we've heard the old adage that sometimes too much of a good thing may not necessarily be a good thing.
Right.
And in the case of these three generals, they all carried with them the two universal traits of human behavior that are always obstacles to virtuous human behavior. And these are ambition and avarice, or as we might say in the vernacular, power and greed. It is probably safe to assume, especially since we study history, that these three hotshot generals had a healthy share of these negative traits. So this is what they did with those. And it's also safe to assume that most thought that were living back then, especially British citizens, that the most powerful military in the world would have no trouble subduing in short order the upstart military of these disparate colonies in America. However, when the mighty British military did not crush the rebellion in the first year in 1776, these three generals started thinking about what they could do to improve their positions if they were the ones to deliver victory to the British. So they all came up with their own ideas of what that would look like. So first of all, the politically connected General Howe's idea was to win the glory and the prizes that went with that. Again, ambition and avarice. And the way to do that was to capture the capital city of Philadelphia and crush George Washington's army in the process. So that was his idea. Now, General Burgoyne, who was also politically connected, he actually left his post in Boston in early 1776, before the British were forced out by Washington in March of 1776, if we can remember back to those times when we gave those presentations. He led some British troops in Canada against the Continental Army, and then he went back to Britain. He left the theater to convince the political powers there to give him more troops and the authority to pursue his own campaign to win the war in America. He didn't even consult with Howe, who was his commander. He just left. And he would take the British forces in Canada, this was his idea, and go down through the Hudson Valley and split the bellicose New England colonies away from the rest of America and thereby squelch the rebellion. So that's what his idea of his campaign to make him the star. And then General Clinton, the other of the three generals, had been criticizing General Howe's conduct of the war since they first arrived here in America. So to rid himself of Clinton's pesky nagging, Howe gave him all the little dirty jobs that he could while he was here in America. So in early 1776, as we can remember back because we talked about that, he sent him down to Charleston to capture the city while Howe stayed up and captured New York City in late 1776. Then he sent him to Providence, Rhode Island, to find a safe winter harbor for the fleet, while Howe would go down through New Jersey and crush Washington and capture Philadelphia. And then in 1777, the year we're talking about today, he told him, "You stay in New York City and protect it, while I go to Philadelphia and capture the capital city." All of this comes to a head in 1777. Burgoyne comes back from Britain and tells Howe, his commander, that he's gone over to Britain, and he's talked with Lord Germain, the British Secretary of State for America. And Lord Germain has given him an army and orders to conquer the Hudson Valley from the north. And he gave you orders, you and General Clinton, are to support my efforts by leading your troops up the Hudson Valley from New York City. And
I imagine Hal, that went over pretty well, huh?
Yeah, and Hal tells him, okay, Burgoyne, you go ahead and do that. And afterwards, Hal begins his campaign down in Philadelphia. So it's, we don't see anything wrong. And again, he says, Clinton, you stay in New York City and guard the city and be prepared to support Burgoyne's campaign when I give you the order to do that. I'm sure no one can see any problems with this situation.
Oh, I'm sure they all said yes, one for all and all for one on that one. Hey, Ben Martin, yeah. Let's go to break. Absolutely fascinating. And we can see how ambition and avarice can actually probably, because of that, work in the favor of the Americans. So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Ben Martin.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
Americans Veteran Stories with Kim Munson. Sunday afternoons at 3 here on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7.
God bless America.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. On the line with me is Ben Martin. This is our show regarding the Revolutionary War. We have one show each month on this to learn about our history. It's brought to you by the Harris family. Greatly appreciate them on that. I can see there's three big egos with these major generals here from the British Army, and their egos can get in the way and probably help the Americans, correct, Ben Martin?
That's exactly right. And we'll see that just by what they laid out, what we know through history, that there was their idea of how this campaign should go to make them the star of the show. So now we're going to talk about Hal's idea of what was the best way to do it. And he kind of gave us a hint of this when he was doing the campaign in 1776, going down through New Jersey, all the way down south, really close to our capital city of Philadelphia, hoping that things would go well and he might capture it in 1776 and end the war right then, or if not, set himself up for doing that in the next year. So putting himself at the far south in New Jersey. So that didn't work, and so now we're in 1777. And so on 23 July 1777, Howe assembles the largest armada ever assembled in America to that date, of course, and sets sail off of Sandy Hook, New Jersey. It is carrying over 17,000 British soldiers and sailors in over 260 ships. The armada was headed for an attack on the capital city of Philadelphia. They underwent a very distressful 34-day trek in those ships. The voyage took its toll in lost time, seasick soldiers, and scores of dead horses. So Washington's intentions were to shadow the movement of that British fleet because he had intelligence that was telling him what was being assembled. I mean, you don't just assemble that in one day. Mm-hmm. And they started in northern New Jersey, as we said, off of Sandy Hook. As the British fleet set sail off of Sandy Hook, Washington had his army assembled there in northern New Jersey, and he had his coast watchers out. Washington was ready to move. He saw him moving south, but then he lost sight of the fleet for an agonizing three-week period, starting with the armada. When the armada moved farther offshore as it passed the Delaware Capes, he feared that the fleet may have doubled back to New York, maybe to help Burgoyne in his attempt to capture upstate New York, until he could determine the destination of the fleet, Washington needed to maintain a position where he could move north or south. And when their destination was clear, Washington moved south to a position between the head of Elk and Philadelphia. In that position, that place was Wilmington, Delaware.
Okay. How many people, how many in his army, how many in Washington's army at that time?
Well, at different times, he had different ones as he moved through the states. He started out with about 15,000 as he was moving down. So, I mean, that's why I'm saying they had more people in involved in fighting, because we have a whole other campaign that's going on up in with Burgoyne up in the northern part of the states right then.
So, and who's commanding those troops up there?
Yeah. So it was almost about the same size. So you've got two.
And who was commanding? So Ben, who was commanding the northern troops?
That was Burgoyne.
But on our side.
No. I'm sorry. On our side, we'll go into that next time. But just to give you, it was Horatio Gates, and I don't want to get into any more. I have a lot to say about him next month.
Okay. Sounds good.
So approximately 3 o'clock in the morning on Monday, 25 August 1777, the Eagle, the big ship of the line for the British, was off the waters of the head of Elk, carrying General Howe and Admiral Howe in leading this huge British invasion force, or armada. The problem at hand for Howe was that of the landing of those 265-plus ships, they were laden with soldiers and ordnance, you know, cannon and shots, ammunition, into a narrow river neck, contributing to the logistic logjam. That narrow neck of the river, of the Elk River, was the Elk River's shallow and muddy character, which left the heavier frigates and the ships of the line farther down the river for fear of being stuck in the mud.
Okay.
So it created this big logistics problem. So the British again used the flat bottom boats that were stored in the largest ships, like they did in New York City. The only problem was New York City had a great deep water harbor, and so you could drive right up to the docks in a lot of places to unload a lot of this material and horses, but you couldn't do that there. So the British began 60 disembarkations to get all of these soldiers and equipment off. And each of these debarkations of flatboats landed about 3,000 soldiers in addition to ordnance and supplies. And there were hundreds of cannon, mortars, howitzers, plus tents and baggage for 17,000-plus men. And to add to that, the ammo for the artillery, 300 rounds of ammunition or balls for each field piece, and 6,000 spare rounds. You're talking about a lot of weight and a lot of trouble to put these off the ship onto these barges or, you know, flat-bottom boats and bring them to shore. So the process of debarking was very slow. Landing soldiers and equipment on unfamiliar terrain continued throughout the day. The soldiers spent much of the days when they got off constructing huts, foraging, and assisting in the unloading of the ships. And some of the British spent Monday night in huts that they had built, while others spent their last miserable night aboard the ships. On Tuesday morning, the 26th, the last off of the ships were the horses. They started out good, strong horses that were needed for hauling the cannon and the ammo, and for, you know, across these bad roads, and for the mounts of the cavalry, the dragoons, who would lead the battle charges. But the horses were in bad shape because they had been in the ships and they couldn't exercise. And, you know, horses can mess up a lot of floor space. So of the 320 horses, the strong horses that began the voyage, fewer than half survived, Kim. So that was devastating. Because
was the weather so bad? I mean, it seems like 34 days to make that trip. It's not that far, really. Was it really bad weather and hurricanes, or what was going on?
Yes, there was a lot of bad weather going on at the time, and then They had to get around the Cape of Delaware, and I think they were trying to fool Washington a little bit. That's why they moved far offshore so that his coast watchers couldn't wow. see what they were doing. So okay. I think a lot of the delay might have been, you know, intentional. But that kept the soldiers, the soldiers couldn't come out on deck, and the sure. horses couldn't come out on deck, so they couldn't even see the sun. They couldn't walk around. They couldn't exercise. Because wow. Howe had lost so much time getting there, he was in a rush to complete the debarkation and begin his march in Philadelphia. So he got all the troops off, but he told them, do not unpack the baggage or the camp equipment, because repacking it would take too long in getting it ready to travel. And Howe wanted to go right away, to move out immediately. However, as he got all the men and the horses off the ship and ready to move, another terrible storm struck that night, soaking the soldiers, and they were ordered not to unpack tents, so they didn't have any shelter. And the ammunition of both armies was ruined. And flooding the dirt roads that they were going to carry them on, they were flooded, and so it was very terrible. So Howe said, okay, instead of moving out on Wednesday, you know, on that, on Tuesday, he said, we'll move out on Wednesday. Well, there was other rains on Wednesday and throughout the night, and so he had this delay again. The delay was a blessing to all, since the ammunition was still wet and unusable, and the horses and the soldiers were still weak and not sufficiently refreshed. So on Tuesday, 28 August, he finally gets to move out. He moves a few miles ahead of his position, and his main concern was the condition of the roads. They were very rugged and broken down with ruts, and you know, some of them were really soft because they were all mud. And the two other issues that confronted the British forces after landing was, one, they were not joined by the large number of promised loyalists, and they had no sources of food for this massive army.
Wow.
So Cornwallis moved approximately 8 miles to Elkton in 5 hours. That's pretty slow. The crafty DE militia, under the overall command of our old friend, General Caesar Rodney, had taken mm-hmm. supplies from the town of Elkton just minutes before Cornwallis arrived. So Washington had expected the British to travel along the most direct route to Philadelphia, as we talked about before. So he initially positioned his headquarters in Wilmington, Delaware. However, the British began their first of many repeated flanking movements that they hid from Washington. Just like, if you remember, the battle in Long Island, where Washington thought this attack was coming directly at him, and they swung the real attack around to the right. So the first battle of this campaign occurred on Wednesday, 3 September, at a place called Cooch's Bridge. And it was the only major battle. The reason I mention it was the first battle of this campaign, and it was the only major battle of the Revolutionary War that was actually fought in the state, or the colony at the time, but the state of Delaware. The American commander was this guy named Brigadier General Maxwell. And you talked about who was the commander of the American Army up north, and it was Horatio Gates. Now, Horatio Gates had already showed himself to be an enemy of George Washington and wanting his job, and he undermined him all throughout the New Jersey campaign, and he wouldn't come to his aid. And I told you right before they had the Battle of Trenton, Gates walked through the camp that Washington was in, and Washington said, I need you for this battle. And he said, nah, I'm sorry, I'm headed to the Capitol to talk to the politicians, you know, about myself. And so he just left his commander out there to fend for himself. So he said, oh, and he left his army with him, too. He said, okay, you can command my army, or you can get somebody to command my army. Shows you what a commander he was. Anyway, so Gates was conducting now his campaign up in New York, and he wanted Daniel Morgan's brigade of riflemen. This was probably one of the best units that has ever been in the American Army, and it was certainly one of the best units that Washington had at the time. But Washington, unlike the three British generals, Washington, you know, gave him Daniel Morgan's brigade to go up there and help him win the Saratoga campaign. Although this, like I said, this was a great sacrifice to Washington because he needed those guys too. So in order to replace that unit, Washington requested each of his 8 brigades send him 100 of their best marksmen, and he formed his own special light infantry brigade, a corps, and he put it under the command of a Brigadier General Maxwell, who most of us had never heard of. But he had had a lot of experience in military, fighting in the French and Indian War, and so he was a really good guy to have. And he was an Irishman who had fought in the French army over in Europe also. Okay. And so, yes, go ahead.
Ben, we need to take a break. Why don't we do that very quickly? I'm talking with Ben Martin, patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, West Point graduate, and we're talking about our Revolutionary War, bringing this alive. These people were human beings. They had faults. They had good things as well. And we're seeing how this plays out for the Americans. Before we go to break, Castlegate Knife and Tool is another great sponsor of the show. They sponsor both the Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories. Hal and Linnea Van Herke are entrepreneurs. The business is located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. And they have knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. They also are bringing in several lines of watches, and we'll be doing some specials on watches as well. And so whether or not you're a chef or a collector or a sportsman, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. Check out their website. That's castlegate.com. Castlegate.com. We'll be right back with Ben Martin.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
From the mountains.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. On the line with me is Ben Martin, patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, and graduate of West Point. And we're talking about our American Revolutionary War for our independence. And thank you to the Harris family for their sponsorship of this show. Okay, Ben, this show always goes way too fast. So we have one segment left here. So what do we need to know?
Well, we want to talk about the big battle of this campaign and one of the bloodiest battles of the Revolutionary War, and that was the Battle of Brandywine Creek. Now, that's what Howe was looking. That's where he was headed when he landed at the head of Elk, and that was a big thing that he wanted to do, and he had looked at that. So he starts moving. First thing, like I said, he had that battle at Cooch's Bridge. And that was the first battle, and I want to talk about that. From there, the action moves to Brandywine Creek, and the battle starts on the 11th of September. But Wednesday night of 10 September, Washington moves his forces there. He crosses the river, and he sets up on the eastern side of the river on the high ground. These are very great defensive positions. And it puts him between Philadelphia and the British Army, and he has these really great positions. The thing is, and he puts his men out across a span of 6 miles on the river to block all of these crossing sites that he has, or fords, as they were back then. The problem is he doesn't do enough reconning, and the intel information he gets from the locals doesn't tell him everything that's going on. the loyalists that are there tell Howe a lot more about what's going on the river or the creek than Washington's patriots tell him that are living there. So Washington sets up his defense on the eastern side of the river on the high ground. It's a great defensive position, but Howe knows more about what's going on Brandywine Creek. So Howe puts General Kneiphausen, the British Hessian, ally, he puts him right there at Chad's Ford, and that's the most direct line to get to Philadelphia. And Washington thinks that's where the main battle is going to be. And so he puts General Greene's army on the other side of that ford, because he knows that's where it's going to be, and he wants his best general there. And then he sets up his other generals and their divisions up north. So that's all the way at the south ford, and then he sets up for 6 miles all these other generals to watch these other forts. But Howe puts his big force there so that it looks like that's where he's going to cross. And at the same time, he leads Cornwallis and his force to the left all the way around more than 2 miles above. So it's like a 12-mile trip, but he goes 2 miles above where Washington's people are set on the river, and he flanks them there, but he makes this big demonstration down at Chad's Ford, like that's where he's going to cross. And so the whole time, Washington is keeping his forces down there while Cornwallis and Howe are sweeping around so that they can attack from the north, which is really not defended. So this becomes a really big thing. Washington keeps getting contradicting intelligence. Hey, we see a big force up here, a big British force up here. And then another spy or another intel guy will come back and say, no, there's really nothing up here. And so he keeps going back and forth. What in the heck is happening? And then when he does see that they're saying that there's a big British force up there, he says, well, maybe they're going up north to Reading to take away my supply depot. Or maybe they do have troops up there, but maybe that's a feint for me to go after them. And as soon as I move my forces out from the south, then that big British force that we can see across the river will come through. So he's kind of in a dilemma. He doesn't know what to do. Finally, after a long while, after they have already made the turn and are coming down to attack him, he says, okay, this is for real. And he starts sending reinforcements up there. So in the north, and they have this big fight up there, and the British have a lot more forces up there and a lot stronger forces than Washington has up there, and that Washington could send, because he still thinks we've got a big British force right across from us, and if I move all of these troops out, they're going to come right across. So he sends a force up there, and they fight, and they have this horrific battle with the British. But the British are even impressed at how strong the American forces are fighting and how disciplined they are and how it's really difficult for them and they're, to move against the American troops. So this fight goes on, but the British eventually wear down the forces, the American forces, and so the American forces keep breaking contact and going back a little bit farther and reforming their defense and fighting again. And so they're doing this with a lot of discipline, but they're losing the battle, although they're creating a lot of casualties. And so then that's when they bring up, Washington decides to send more reinforcements up there, and he sends them, and he eventually sends General Greene up there, and they fight this tremendous battle, and Greene, he stops the British forces from coming down, so the American forces that have been up there battling with him can escape the battlefield and go down to Chester, Pennsylvania. And while Brink Green's doing that, then just like he'd expected, that big British force that's down south just across the creek from him decides then they're going to attack, and they go straight east, and they're trying to cut the British off, I mean the Americans off from getting the Chester and escaping the battlefield. So he does that. He does a great job of it. Green does a great job being out of position and coming in late, moving his force under fire so well, and in saving the American cause and getting everybody out so that they get out of there about the time that sunset happens and it gets dark, and the British are afraid to follow the Americans on unknown trails to pursue them. So they get out of there safely. And this is just, this turns out to be not a victory, but a great awakening to the British that, hey, you know, you can't take the American troops for granted.
Wow. Ben Martin, I think that's going to be our thought today, is the Americans stood and the British realized that this is serious. So, Ben Martin, thank you so much. I cannot wait till we continue this conversation next month.
Okay, thank you, Kim. I enjoyed it.
And our quote for today is from De Lafayette, and he said, "I read, I study, I examine, I listen, I reflect, and out of all this, I try to form an idea into which I can put as much common sense as I can." Wow. So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically. Strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America. And I don't want no one to cry.